to choose a topic that could be interesting for experimentalists. So I've chosen this one, even if there is some unfinished work. So I start with a standard introduction, followed by a less standard introduction, and next I start on the TED Talk that came from a work done in collaboration with Marco Cirelli and Nicolao Fornengo. So this, you know, this is the standard picture. And here, what I want to tell is first that we have measured a lot of things, and second, we have understood a lot of things. We understand the total energy density, and we also understand a lot of relative densities. This is from inflation, and the second from Big Bang thermal relics. What we don't understand is two issues, dark matter and the baryon asymmetry. So, since this scenario is so successful, it is natural to try to explain dark matter and baryon asymmetries within this scenario. And here I focus on dark matter. And as well known, one gets a very nice result that if dark matter is a thermal relic, it should have a mass somewhere around the TV, and this is very good because it can be tested both at colliders and direct searches. So, okay, maybe let me spend a few minutes explaining this. So, we assume that dark matter is some particle with mass m, and at some point the temperature cools down below m. So, if there is thermal equilibrium, the dark matter density is Boltzmann suppressed, and this is the red line in this plot. However, at some point, there are too few dark matters that annihilation stops, and some freeze out abundance remains. To estimate this, annihilation stops when the scattered annihilation rate became comparable to the expansion rate. So from this you estimate how many dark matter remain. This is the estimate in units of the photon density. You can convert this from number density to energy density, insert the measured number, insert the typical cross-section, and get this result, which tells that the dark matter mass is the geometric mean between zero and infinity, which happily is TV. Okay, so this is the standard introduction. Now let me go to be less standard. The opinions that here I tell are minority opinions, and furthermore they are confused because today we are confused. So usually theorists see TV, and the TV is an important scale because here it is believed that there should be some big new physics that should make the weak scale naturally small. This is the so-called hierarchy problem. And in this approach, dark matter is usually seen as a byproduct. For example, the most popular approach is supersymmetry that adds a lot of new particles, some of them, are possible dark matter candidates, provided that one also adds some symmetry that keeps them stable. And more or less a similar story repeats in other approaches. So this is a very nice. So here I only tell what is not very nice, in my opinion. First, that the matter stability is imposed at the hoc. Maybe this can be justified. Anyhow, there are few particles which are known and are stable, and they are stable for other reasons. Second, these solutions to the hierarchy problem predict a rich phenomenology that today maybe starts to be embarrassingly rich when compared to the nothing seen in experiments so far. At least the simplest models start to have some problem and survive by fine-tuning their free parameters. Okay, this is just an aesthetical aspect, but the whole motivation of these models is to explain this without fine-tuning. Finally, since there are many free parameters, for example, the MSSM, the phenomenology of dark matter remains obscure. You have a vast parameter space, so you move from here to here, and the phenomenology completely changes. What people in practice now, for the moment, can do is not computing one prediction, but doing scatter plots with a lot of points. Now, some years ago, theory was very successful in anticipating the standard model, and the white line was gauge invariance. Now, theorists are trying to be successful in anticipating physics beyond the standard model, but they are employing a different white line, which is naturalness. Okay, this is an assumption, and recently, as surely there have been some developments that give doubts. We have seen a cosmological constant which seems unnaturally small. There are these little fine-tuning problems. There are alternative anthropic considerations that could explain hierarchies unnaturally. And this maybe can be realized theories that are very popular. Okay, so what can I do? Okay, so for sure not the intelligent thing to do is wait the experiment. In the meantime, I try to study dark matter because I'm sure that dark matter exists, and I want to do it ignoring naturalness. So basically I spent 15 minutes for telling that I will not follow naturalness. So what I try to do in the standard model, the standard model explains in a beautiful way why baryon number is conserved. So the stability of the proton, lepton number, lepton flavor, and other things about CP. So this is, in my opinion, very nice. But if you add the supersymmetry and other approaches, these features of the standard model are destroyed, and all of these observed facts must be reimposed by doing ad hoc assumptions. For example, you assume matter parity, and maybe you do gauge mediation, you assume that new term is real, and so on. Okay, maybe this is true, but here I try to follow another road. I want to preserve these nice successes of the standard model and possibly extend them to explain also why dark matter is stable. So let me go to tell. Let me come to the real physics. Okay, I add to the standard model some extra particles with name X, because I don't know what they are, and I try to choose their quantum numbers, gauge charges, and spin, such that they make an as good as possible candidate for that matter. Well, this means that I would like to have something predictive that predicts to be stable, to be neutral, and to be compatible with all data we have so far. This is the concrete Lagrangian that I will study, just the standard model plus one extra particle that only has a mass term and a gauge covariant kinetic term, which means a kinetic term plus interactions with the vector bosons. And this can either be a fermion or a scalar. I want to try everything. And the goal is that this term is the only term, not because I kill all other terms that I don't like by inventing some symmetries, but because other terms are automatically forbidden by Lorentz gauge invariants. Similarly to what explains the stability of the proton.
So why do you throw out spin one? Why did you throw out spin one?
Well, spin one, it's impossible. Quantum field theory is very predictive on spin one. I don't see how I could achieve these goals with spin one.
Without introducing some new physics.
Sorry?
You'd have to introduce some new gauge groups.
Yes. theory is very predictive, so I don't see how one could achieve this with vectors. So I try with either fermions or scalars. So this is one goal. Another goal is assume that for whatever reasons this is the Lagrangian. For example, maybe there are other terms and there is some symmetry that kills all of them, such that I anyhow get this Lagrangian and study what is its phenomenology. This phenomenology is both non-trivial and unusual. In fact, it is completely predictive because there is one free parameter which has been already measured from the dark matter abundance. So, to proceed, let me summarize. I am making assumptions. One, that dark matter is a thermal relic. Two, that it only has gauge interactions. These assumptions believe are plausible, but of course there are a lot of other cases that are not in this category. So first I do a botanic classification of multiplet that can contain a neutral particle. So single, double, triplet, and so on of SU2. So if it is a singlet, the only possibility is zero hypercharge. If it is a doublet, the only possibility is hypercharge 1/2, just like the xeno or leptons, that contains a neutral component in this way. If it is a triplet, there are two possible hypercharges, zero and one, so zero neutral component in the middle, and one in this way. And both of these particles are famous. This is the Wino supersymmetry. These already appeared in Littolin's model or so. Well, being famous here is bad, because a famous particle is famous because it couples to other particles, which is not what we want. We want something that doesn't want to couple to other particles. And this will be achieved by going on to more complicated multiplets. This will be the interesting case. So next, stable. Now, what does a stable mean? One has to forbid all renormalizable couplings, and to be cosmologically stable, one also need to forbid the dimension 5 non-renormalizable operators, because they will give too fast decay. For example, a scalar 5 plet could have this coupling, and this will make too fast decay into 4 Higgs. Dimension 6 operators instead are fine. This is, for example, the case of proton decay, which is so slow that we cannot discover it for the moment. So, the first candidates that are automatically stable are fermion 5 plets or if scalar heptaplets in Greek. So to be concrete, now this is the full list of single, double, triple, and so on. For each one, I list the operators which will give unwanted decay, and it is only at this level that no coupling is possible. So these are the first candidates, and they also are the last ones, because if one gets too crazy, coupling constants around so far that one gets one outputs at low energy, which is not nice. So this is the full list. And next I will go on computing the predicted property. So okay, as I said, I have two goals. One is doing some classification, and the other is searching for cases that seem more interesting. So next, in each case, I try to study what is the mass splitting within the multiplet. So I have, for example, a doublet which has a neutral and the charged components that at the level have the same mass. Okay, you don't need the light. And this one, okay. At the level, they are degenerate, and one wants to see what happens. So first of all, if you have a scalar, then the effect is never computable, because there is always this other coupling which gives a mass splitting. So there is one extra free parameter. What I do in my classification is I assume that this coupling is small enough to be subdominant with respect to the loop effect that we will compute. And this is not a crazy assumption, because the effect of this coupling is suppressed by the mass of dark matter, unlike the loop effect. So if this lambda is smaller than something like 0.1, it will be subdominant. Next, there is one computable effect from these Feynman diagrams that produce a mass splitting. Either the lighter component wants to be neutral, or I stop the seminar. So this is the result. This is some loop function which becomes very simple in the limit where dark matter is much heavier than vector bosons, and we will see that this is the relevant limit. So the mass difference simplifies to this. So you get the mass splitting of 166 MeV in all cases where hypercharge is zero, something similar otherwise. And furthermore, the lightest component chooses to be neutral. This came out. So let me now, okay, this is a nice standard computation. Let me now explain it in a intuitive way. What they tell is that this mass splitting is nothing else than the Coulomb energy. So this is the dark matter that they plot small, because I'm assuming that it is very heavy. If you go very far, you can see its electric field. If you have a charged component, you get closer and you start seeing also the electric fields. And this is the standard formula on electrodynamics for the electromagnetic energy. If you get very close, this is divergent. However, the mass splitting is not divergent, because if you get very close, you have SU2 symmetry, and the mass splitting is finite and computable. And of course, with this argument, you get the same result as with Feynman diagrams. This, for example, explains why spin becomes irrelevant in the limit of heavy dark matter. Spin is where this small ball is orbiting, but everything inside this big ball is irrelevant due to SU2 gauge invariance. And furthermore, we will later compute various cross sections. the result will often be that at very low energy, water scatters is not the big ball, but is the large ball. So we will get the results that, okay, first of all, is big, and second, does not depend on the mass of the matter and on its spin. So first we want to compute the dark matter abundance. If you look on Google for abundance, you find all my papers. So this is a standard computation, the one outlined at the beginning. Now you have to compute the accumulation cross section, and it fits out temperature is something like the mass of the matter over this logarithm, which is about 26. So you have to compute all these diagrams in the non-relativistic limit. We assume that dark matter is heavy, so that we can do a SQ computation. We get all the results in one shot by using some SQ algebra like this one. So all cases are given by this formula. And you can put numbers and get the mass of dark matter in each case. As we see, it is around the TV, but unfortunately, it's typically more than one TV, so that it is difficult to discover it at colliders. And in general, this also tells that the connection between dark matter and the hierarchy problem is not numerically tight.
If you go back one page, you can.
One page? Sorry, you mean this?
Right, so how did you get those masses in the table again? You required that the observed abundance is correct?
Yes. So this model has one free parameter. I fix from this observer number, next I can compute everything.
And that's assuming the canonical dark matter density without cusps and things like that, is that right?
The better determination came now from CMB and from the power spectrum. So it is, I strongly believe it is a safe number. Now this is very beautiful. Unfortunately, it's wrong because we missed the non-perturbative effects that became relevant when the mass of dark matter is larger than this QTV. You might believe now that I am crazy with that non-perturbative effects. This is very standard physics. This is so old the physics that has been forgotten. When you go to low energies, all scatterings get non-perturbative corrections because you can form bound states. So, for example, suppose I want to study annihilation of dark matter neutral with dark matter charged. I have to write the Hamiltonian for this two-body state, which is very similar to the hydrogen atom. And there is a kinetic term. There is a potential term, which came from the non-Hamiltonian analysis of electromagnetism. And furthermore, there is this perturbative annihilation rate. When this potential distorts the wave functions, so the annihilation rate will be the wave function in the origin. So this potential is sizable, for example, giving bound states of two dark matter when the mass is larger than this Nw over alpha. And furthermore, when the kinetic energy that we are considering is of the same order. Now, since alpha is about 130 and the temperature relevant for cosmology is about 1/30 of the mass, then typically these effects have to be included. And this was studied previously by Sommerfeld and Hisano and by Japanese group. We need, it's a quite long computation, and we need to do it. For the moment, now let me anticipate that. This is not the non-perturbative enhancement, how it depends when you go to low temperature. If result is here, so it will be order one correction. When you go to very, very, very low temperatures, you see that in some cases you can get the crazy enhancements. Later we will discuss them and why they can be relevant in other computations.
Is this related to the 1 over V Schwinger enhancement, or is that just sort of part of the story and this is the full story?
I'm sorry, but I don't know what is this.
Well, there's an enhancement if you're near threshold.
Exactly.
In the scattering cross section.
Yes, I suppose it is exactly this.
I know it's very important in the Gluino LSP scenario that we computed the Schwinger or velocity enhancement. So I'm just wondering numerically how similar that approach is to this wave function approach.
Okay, I'm not sure it's the same thing, later. And there will be more about this. I have computed the mass of dark matter, and I want to check if it is compatible with dark matter experiments. And they roughly tell that dark matter must be neutral under the photon, under the gluon. And now, experiments also tell that dark matter must be almost neutral under the Z. The reason is just this, that if you put here an electric recoupling, then this cross section is much too big. So this means that all candidates with non-zero hypercharge that have this vertex are excluded. As usual, in theory, something is excluded, then you complicate the theory to make it allowed. And if one likes to play this game, this is what one can do. So instead of being minimal, you add extra coupling to the Higgs, possibly induced by exchange of a singlet. And this fixes everything. This can fix every furthermore, if this effect is very small, then this effect disappears and all the rest remains untouched. I don't want to insist too much on this. Let me just tell that this is precisely what happens in the MSSM for the Xeno. The Xeno is a doublet with hypercharge 1F. It is a possible dark matter candidate because it mixes with the Bino. A very, 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 very small mixing is enough. I'm trying to do now also some classification. So in the following, I keep everything, for a candidate with zero hypercharge, nothing of this is needed. For a candidate with hypercharge, you have to do to play this game. So now this is zero, and the effect arises at one loop. This is the result of the computation. So there is a spin-independent effect, which is suppressed not by the mass of the matter, but only by the mass of the W. This is somewhat surprising if you look at the diagram, but this is one example of the visible phenomenon, and there is a spin-dependent perception that is completely invisible because it is suppressed by the mass of the matter, again in agreement with the big ball. Okay, to be precise, you know, here I put this quark operator, but in reality there are four different quark operators that became equivalent only on shell. For example, one other operator is this one. I can be sloppy because nobody ever studied the matrix element of this, so okay, no, there is no point in being careful. What I can do is, okay, I put this just this on shell operator and an unknown coefficient that parameterizes the matrix element. This should be of order one. For two operators, it is known. I will assume one third for no reason. So there is this uncertainty, but it is a QCD uncertainty, no, but that can be eliminated by working. So now I can plot the prediction for the dark matter direct detection. This is the prediction of the Fermion quintuplet up to these matrix elements, up to some astrophysical uncertainties, and up to these non-perturbative effects that will move somewhere here. Other candidates, are other points. For comparison, this is the present experimental bound, and this is what some future experiments believe that they can do. And this cloud is an example of the scatter plots that you can get within the MSSM. Now, next, indirect searches. This means that dark matter still annihilate today in the center of the Sun, of the Earth, and of the galaxy, and we can hope to detect the annihilation products. So we compute the relevant process. This is interesting because photons are easily detectable. And the result of the computation of this diagram gives a cross-section which is too small to be interesting. However, it's curious that this one-loop diagram is numerically comparable to this other three-level effect. This is again a signal that non-perturbative effects are becoming relevant. Diagrams with more and more loops are relevant, and indeed the resummation of all these ladder diagrams is equivalent to solving the Schrödinger equation I discussed before. Let me point out this possible big announcement which was first noticed by Pisano, that happens for specific values of the dark matter mass. So what can happen is the following, that the mass of the two-body system of charged dark matter is degenerate with the two-body neutral dark matter. And this happens when the charged is heavier by this 166 MeV alpha times Mw. However, there is also a binding energy of the two-body system given by a formula analogous to the hydrogen atom, alpha square times the mass of the particle. So this can compensate this for specific values of the dark matter mass, which again give this Mw over alpha. And here I computed the precise values of the dark matter mass that give this big enhancement. So if the dark matter mass is very close to these specific values, there is this very big enhancement. Now, does it happen?
I don't know now, because the values of the mass that I put here will have to be revised, including non-perturbative effects. And anyhow, you know, even if here particle physics is line of principle fully computable, these signals have very big astrophysical uncertainties, so maybe this computation is anyhow not very useful. So let me now try to see now if this unusual dark matter, that it is unusual because there is one neutral component and one charged component, they are almost degenerate, if this unusual situation gives some unusual signals. So neutral current scattering arises only at one loop, but charged current scattering arises at every level. So in line of principle, it is can be computed and is much bigger. However, production of charged dark matter, you need kinetic energy equal to the mass difference. Otherwise, it is kinematically forbidden. You need the kinetic energy of about 166 MeV, and this galaxy, dark matter, only has about 1 MeV. So, this doesn't happen. What one could do is this. So let's try to build a beam of protons on a V of nuclei and let it circulate. You build a collider without a collision point. You want to have a beam of particles that is as intense as possible, such that here in this room there is 0.0 GeV per centimeter cube of dark matter. Sometimes one proton in this beam will hit the dark matter this happening. So what comes out is the charged component of dark matter. So how many events there are? Well, I don't know now because nobody is interested in building a big beam. So I don't know what is now the maximal beam that can be practically built. Should be something, this value I believe is fully realistic. You can build a beam with 10 to 20 protons. In this case, now you can get an event rate which is very small, but not ridiculously small. So the question, you can have some events. The next question is, do you see these events or not? So what is the background? This is also unusual physics. It is beam related, this background related to the beam. In practice, the result is that you would see these events only if this charge of the matter gives a very clean signature. So next, let us compute how charged matter behaves. And this is the result. Now, charged matter has a macroscopic lifetime, but unfortunately, it is macroscopic this way, a few centimeters, not in this way. And the reason is that, unfortunately, the mass splitting is bigger than the pion mass, such that the two-body decay is open. This gives the dominant contribution to the decay rate. This is the prediction for the lifetime of charged dark matter. So you produce it, but it only works for a small distance, which in practice means that you will not detect it. This plot, it's curious. Here I plot in the plane mass and lifetime the position of all particles. For example, these are hadrons. This is the muon. This is the tau. In this plane,
this dark matter will be around here. So experimentally, you know, its lifetime is something in between the muon and the tau. It's something unusual. No? Experimentally, it's not that the muon is a lepton and the tau is a hadron. This behaves in some intermediate way. This is just experimental language. The tau decays so fast into hadrons that for them it is like a hadron. So, okay, now how does charged dark matter behave in a collider? But we can skip this. Okay, so collider signals, they are indirect and direct. Precision data, you can compute what they give, but it's not interesting. Okay, so, which is good now because it's not excluded. And it is bad because it will not be discovered in this way. So, direct production at the LHC. And to start, let me recall the more famous case of supersymmetry, where the production is mainly from neutrinos that decay into everything, so that at the end the signal is missing energy because the matter escapes, but together with other particles like jets and hopefully muons. In this case, it's different. So production, you just have to produce them, and you can compute what is the production rate. What is the signal? Now, what do you see? So, here is the collision. You produce, if you produce a neutral dark matter, forget it, you don't see it. When you produce a charged dark matter, it gives a straight track, but it is non-relativistic. Because the mass of dark matter is comparable to the energy of LHC. It works for a few centimeters. In the detector there are 5 centimeters in which you are blind, so hopefully it enters the detector. After these 5 centimeters it decays, and it decays into a pion with Brenci ratio 97.7%. The pion is relativistic, so you see a track that goes slow, but straight. The case becomes fast and curved. Okay, nothing in the standard model can give this. Despite this, you will see nothing at LHC because. Okay, present triggers are not dedicated to this. And furthermore, it seems impossible to invent a trigger can check every track and see if this happens. This is impossible now for 2 reasons. Okay, first, because the detectors at LHC are the big monsters. And the trigger is put at the border of the experiment, while here everything happens in just a few centimeters. So these detectors are completely useless for searching for the signal.
I guess I'll disagree with that, but maybe not right now. Discuss it later again.
Okay. Of course, not. They are not useful for searching for other things.
I'm talking about this. I mean, if you have a hard interaction, which whatever you're doing is a hard interaction, U, D, bar, whatever,
mm-hmm.
The U and D bar are going to radiate jets, and you're making a massive state, right? So whenever you make a massive state, you're going to get initial state radiation associated with that reduction process some 50% of the time. So you'll get a jet in association with your U, D bar collision.
Yes,
that jet can be used to trigger the interaction, and then detectors are active and they can in fact look for this kind of thing.
Okay, let me show now these numbers mean in practice.
How many events of this type per roughly per year?
You don't get any events, okay, well, that's...
No, okay.
The detector's fault.
No, okay. You can get, depends on the case. Okay, so in the case in which I am most interested, forget it, a mass of 40 ring is too much for Alexei. In other cases, you can get maybe 110, something reasonable, but... the background is orders and orders of magnitude bigger, not the hadronic background. I don't see how you can get. So okay, there is a jet, there are an enormous number of jets.
But they claim they can. If the thing is only a centimeter or something like that, then their essential tracker can, in fact, look for these kinds of signals. So these actually have names like DIT and various things that Steve Moretta and I coined, and they're common to other, page-mediated supersymmetry breaking signals and what have you. So using the jet trigger, you can, in fact, then look inside your central tracker for this kind of sudden appearance of a track, and it's quite clean, in fact.
Okay. we can discuss later. Okay, now I also asked to many experimentalists how to do this, and the answer ranges from moderately not to absolutely not, and unfortunately the experimentalists who say not at all are the ones that need similar searches at LEP. So.
Okay, well, there's actually been a lot of discussion of this in the future,
so let me now try another signal possible related to this situation in astrophysics. Now, let us suppose that some cosmic rays at ultra high energies. Some of them are dark matters. Okay, in the usual case, this is not a plausible assumption for the standard acceleration mechanism of cosmic rays. And even in this case, this assumption is not plausible. We'll need some non-standard mechanism. Anyhow, let us suppose that this happens. If this happens, something interesting goes on. So, this is the Earth. The matter arrives. If it is, it is heavy enough, that it can cross the whole Earth, losing, not all of its energy. You need an energy bigger than this. Okay, but this is not unusual. For example, the neutralino can do the same. In the neutralino case, neutralino enter, gives a chargino, and the chargino decays from here, suddenly decays again into neutral dark matter, such that typically you see nothing. In this case, you have this charged component, which has a not very macroscopic lifetime, enhanced by big Lorentz factor. You can fully compute energy losses, interactions, and so on. And the result is that this is a typical situation. Half of the trip is done in charged state. Maybe here there is this ice cube experiment, so maybe they could see something. Unfortunately, the experimentalists tell that they would see this charged dark matter. They surely see them, and they would believe that it is a muon. They are not able of discriminating this from muon. Okay, for this statement, you need
okay, to do computations, you know, of about how, you know, this behaves, and the result is that a muon, no, to be no relativistic muon can travel for about 1 kilometer in water. Ice cube is 1 kilometer. This is the bad situation. If ice cube were 2 or 3 kilometers, they could discriminate this from a muon. So sorry, no, this is again a negative result.
What is the, in fact, the path length of your mutual dark matter in at these energies? I mean, it's, how does it, is the cross section growing with S, with the energy?
The cross section?
I would think the cross section is quite small, but maybe it's enhanced by energy. I mean, I'm a little bit surprised that it would have that many interactions since it's such a small cross section.
Okay, now this is more or less similar to the case of the neutrino cross section, which is something, you know. I have another talk about, you know, these neutrinos. The neutrino cross section. Okay, no. What happens? Okay, is this. So this is a neutrino, pure dark matter. It's the same. Mm. This is a quark. Mm-hmm. They can exchange a W.
Right.
So, and the energy exchange, you know, can be extremely small. This gives a cross section which is roughly 1/1 mass of the W square. It is not suppressed by S, not suppressed by the mass of dark matter. And if you put part of cross section, this even increases with energy violating unitarity.
Yeah.
In the case of neutrinos, no, this is not clear why this happens. Here is the same.
So what is the path length then if you carry out this computation?
Something like this. This is more or less similar to what can happen.
I see. So that you say that's the actual physical scale of what's happening. Okay.
Something like this.
Mm-hmm.
Now the problem now is that from nuance. Okay. No. So far. I am almost at the end. I don't know how much time.
5-10 more
minutes. Not too much. Okay. No. So far now I wanted to be minimal. Now you can play, you know, other games, for example. If instead of one multiplet you put many of them and you do the same computation, then all of them have to be lighter. No, more dark matter, each one of them has to be lighter. For example, square root of 3 lighter if you put, you know, 3 generations of this. Next, for scalars, they have this quartic interaction. It's my second free parameter. So far, we assume that it is negligible. Here, no. Okay. It's just a bit more quantitative. Maybe a curiosity. If it is 0 at the level, it is not generated by RGE corrections. This quartic coupling would completely change the detection cross sections. This prediction would move up in the scalar case. And finally, if you have this scalar coupling, there is a new candidate. Which is the scalar singlet. The matter could be just a singlet. Okay, this was studied many years ago by somebody else, and I'm sorry that I forgot who. Okay, you can compute in this case its mass function as function of the coupling. Okay. Now let us conclude. So, whatever keeps the matter stable must forbid these couplings. So, one possible situation is that all couplings are forbidden except the minimal one due to gauge interaction,
And we studied this case. Multiplets with zero hypercharge have no problems. Fermions are fully predictive. And there are some cases in which stability comes out for free from the gauge quantum numbers. I consider this interesting, but okay, this is a matter of opinions. The phenomenology is well defined and non-trivial. If I made an order 2 mistake in computing the mass difference such that it is not bigger than the pi of mass, then everything changes. But I have not made this mistake. So, searching for them is difficult. No. The bigger multiplets, you can see them in direct detection experiments of dark matter. The smaller multiplets are lighter, so maybe LHC can do something. Okay, that's all now.